Welcome to the Man Cave Podcast with Dan Casper.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to this episode of the Man Cave Podcast, brought to you by Hy-Vee and Toyson Ford. Also, shout out to Resonance Branding Company, the official swag provider of the Man Cave Podcast. Dan here with you. Dan Casper here with you as always. And well, we're going to cover a bunch of stuff here. We've got some Badger chats with RJ Cardinal coming up here at the back end of this podcast. Going to be hitting up a bunch of different sports over there. We're going to talk some football, a new role for AJ Dillon, and we will continue highlighting certain draft prospects that the Packers could target with their first round pick. So that's all coming up here. Before we get to that, couple of things I want to lead off with. First off, we've got the Final Four is now set for the Women's College Basketball Tournament. Iowa getting a victory over LSU in the rematch from the national championship last year. And then UConn taking down number one seeded USC. So those two teams join NC State and South Carolina, who clinched their ticket, or punched their ticket, excuse me, just the other day. I think, in my opinion, when I look at both the men's and the women's Final Four, to me, again, it's my opinion, the women's Final Four looks more intriguing, is more exciting. I like the matchups here. Now, South Carolina, I'm going to pick over NC State. South Carolina, the job that Dawn Staley has done with that program, another dominant team this year, they're going to go to the national championship. And then you've got a really, really, really fun matchup with Iowa and Caitlin, UConn and Paige over there. I mean, those two. I mean, Caitlin's going to be the first overall pick in the WNBA draft this year. Paige's probably going to be the first overall pick or a very high pick in the following year. You can see those two matching up for years to come. And we're going to get a glimpse of this in the Final Four matchup. We'll see it in the WNBA. That's a fun matchup. And whoever wins that one going up against South Carolina is going to be a really fun matchup. And South Carolina's dominant, kind of on the same maybe pace as like UConn is on the men's side. But I just feel like whoever South Carolina plays in the championship game, it's going to be a really fun matchup. It's going to be a battle. And on the men's side, no offense, but you know, UConn versus Alabama, UConn's going to cruise through. Purdue versus NC State, I think it's going to be UConn-Purdue, which should be a good matchup. But just the way UConn has been dominating, I think they could dominate NC State, Alabama, or Purdue. So, and it's not a knock on them, because this two-year run that they're on has just been absolutely lights out. But just from a fan standpoint, looking at the matchups, I think the women's Final Four is more exciting and has better matchups and is more intriguing than the men's right now. So, and then quickly, baseball. We've got Brewers taking on the Minnesota Twins for their home opener today. You know, Jacob Junis is going to be on the mound here, and he's looking to kind of maybe, improve his career, prolong his career. Then you got Joe Ross tomorrow, who's looking to resurrect his career. And I was thinking about this during the radio show, and we talk about, like, key players to, you know, help propel the Brewers to getting back to the postseason and such, or, you know, Pat Murphy. What about Chris Hook, the pitching coach for the Brewers? Look at the job. Look at the resume he has done since he's been with the Brewers. Corbin Burns, Brandon Woodruff, Freddy Peralta, even helped, you know, resurrect Wade Miley. And maybe he's kind of the unknown wild card key figure in this whole thing for the Brewers to get back to the postseason and to win their division again. Because look at what's one of the biggest concerns we have with this team. When we were looking at this before the season started, what was one of the biggest concerns? Starting pitching. Freddy Peralta, outside of him, it was like, okay, is Wade Miley going to stay healthy? What are you going to get from Colin Ray? DL Hall is young and unproven yet. And then you got, you know, Joe Ross and Jacob Junis and such. We didn't know. Maybe that wild card, maybe that key is Chris Hook, the pitching coach, who has done a fantastic job since he's been the pitching coach with the Brewers. He's going to be instrumental in the development of D.L. Hall. Can he get Jacob Junis back, you know, or even prove his game even though he's in his 30s? Can he help resurrect Joe Ross's career? So I think you can make the case, and I'll make the case, that Chris Hook is one of the biggest keys to the Brewers' success this year. It's one of the biggest wild cards to the Brewers' success this year. If he can get the most out of this starting rotation, and even the bullpen, because remember, Devin Williams is going to be out for a little bit yet. If he can get this pitching rotation, this pitching group together and playing lights out and pitching lights out, Brewers got a really good shot at getting back to the postseason. So I think that kind of flew under the radar a little bit. We take it for granted how good of a job Chris Hook has done for this Brewers team. And his coaching ability is really going to be put to the test this year with this pitching group. And if he can get them all on the same page, man, Brewers give him a big pay raise so he never goes anywhere as a manager or pitching coach elsewhere. And when you go back to when the Brewers were looking for a new manager and Pat Murphy was hired, you know, what did we hear? A lot of the players said, is Chris Hook coming back? They respect him because of the job he has done and the success that he has had of being a pitching coach. A lot of those guys owe their career to Chris Hook. So I think that's going to be – I think Chris Hook, pitching coach, is going to be a very instrumental key to the Brewers getting back to the postseason this year if he can get that pitching staff just cooking. All right, let's transition now to a little football talk. Is out of that same look. And there's a really good write-up from the Washington Post back in January, Sam Fortier, talking about how the 49ers utilize Juszczyk as the fullback and ways that don't show up in the stat sheet. There's a couple nuggets, and I posted it up on my Twitter last night if you want to read the whole thing. But here's a couple of ways where let's I don't like calling him fullback because I guess maybe I still have the fullback mindset in my mind from, you know, back in William Henderson days. But this was from a little bit of from that article in the Washington Post. One of Shanahan's edges is personnel. Most of the NFL relies on light personnel. With more wide receivers and defenses have evolved to limit explosive passing attacks by using two deep coverages. But Shanahan uses heavier personnel with more running backs and tight ends, and he runs the ball more often. Those tendencies force defenses to make difficult choices. They can try to stop the run with a light box or bring in bigger, slower players, which makes them more vulnerable to the pass. And no matter the choice, the defense will be less prepared to stop it. San Francisco's offense is full of versatile all-pros. Kittle, Christian McCaffrey, Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk. Juszczyk is a unique complement. He makes the personnel heavy. He's 6'2", 235, and he can help disguise the intent of any play by lining up at fullback, running back, tight end, or wide receiver, and he can always motion to a different position before the snap. The uncertainty exasperates the 49ers' opponents. So when I read that, and I read Matt LaFleur's comments about movable piece, I'm kind of getting some connections here. I'm kind of drawing some connections here. Like, could this be a role that the Packers, that Matt LaFleur now envisions A.J. Dillon, that, quote, newer type of fullback, a guy that might not light up the box score, might not light up the stat sheet, but you're using him as kind of a chess piece to set up your offense as a whole to try to confuse the defense. You're moving around in motion. We've seen A.J. Dillon motion out to a wide receiver. We've seen him involved in a passing game. We've seen glimpses of that. This wouldn't be something entirely new from A.J. Dillon. So I think there's something that could be there. Now, maybe I'm just like completely looking at this and just trying to like make sense of it all and just maybe grasping at straws here and putting it. But for me, I don't want Jacobs to have to, Josh Jacobs here to, you know, I want him out on the field as much as possible because I think, one, he presents a unique challenge already to the defense. He's shown the ability to be involved in the passing game. We know him as a runner. But now you put him in there, and then you throw in a little A.J. Dillon with a different type of role to try to confuse defenses. You motion him out. I think that maybe adds the other element to this style of offense that, since Matt LaFleur has been there, they really haven't had. You know, again, they tried to have Josiah DeGuara play that role, lining up in the backfield, running routes out of the backfield, trying to be that typical H-back role. And it just never really worked. And now you got A.J. Dillon coming in here. Or now you got A.J. Dillon, who's been with the system for a few years, really understands the playbook. Do you kind of put him in that role, that Alec Ingold role, that Kyle Juszczyk role? Probably won't have as many rushing yards as he has had, you know, the first 3-4 years of his career. But it's a different chapter in his career, potentially. It's a different role in his career, potentially. And maybe, just maybe, it's a role, too, that, one, could extend his career, possibly. You know, at this point, you know, if we believe the rumors, Dallas was interested in him. Giants were potentially interested in him. But let's be real. Probably on a one-year deal for, what, a million, couple million? And then you're kind of jumping place to place after that. That's the life of a running back after a few years. You develop into a role like this, one, it could lead to a nicer payday. I mean, Juszczyk and Alec Ingold signed some nice contracts a couple years ago. Juszczyk's 32. Maybe that just prolongs the career a little bit more, too. Where you're not just the quote-unquote running back and you turn around and hand the ball off to him. So that's something, you know, when we look at this offense and we talk about how this offense, like, oh, yeah, these young wide receivers, especially the rookies last year, they took a nice jump in that second half. You had Jordan Love on there. We got Jacobs. You're talking the tight ends, for crying out loud. There's a lot to like. So what's the new wrinkle? What's the new thing they can maybe add to this offense? Well, maybe it's something that they've been missing the last couple of years. If we're using that Shanahan style of offense as the comparison, as the gauge, and it's kind of been that fullback type of role. I don't know if that's going to be the plan, but I think that's a plan that is worth exploring at this point. I think it's a plan that's got some intrigue to it. And I'm all about, if you're an offense, you're a play caller, I'm all about trying to confuse the heck out of defenses. Trying to find an edge, trying to be more creative. Because I feel like every year, every couple of years, if you're a play caller, you're an offensive play caller, you've got to come with some new stuff every year to keep defenses guessing. You can't be stagnant. You can't just like same playbook, same stuff year in and year out, and then you allow defenses to catch up with you, and then you're just treading water to try to keep your head above it. I kind of like this idea. I think it's a role AJ could potentially excel in. Again, it's not, and I think the other part in that too, which was key, was when Matt LaFleur talked about AJ's pass protection, how it was his best one. All right, blocking. We know he can run routes. We've seen him motion before. There's a lot of connecting the dots there, and I think it leads us to a new role for A.J. Dillon, a role that I think he can perform at well, and this team and this offense can be successful at. Let's take a quick break. We'll have some more Packers talk coming up. after these few words. Started off yesterday kind of highlighting some players that could potentially be a first-round pick for the Packers, and these are players that have either been mentioned in national mock drafts or players that a lot of Packers fans have been kind of banging the table for. And the next we're going to do one. So we're going to do like one or two every day. Today's player I saw on, I believe it was Eric Edholm's NFL.com mock draft, he had this player mocked to the Packers at number 25. Amarius Mims, the massive offensive tackle from Georgia. 6'8", 340 pounds. I mean, Green Bay's kind of dipped their toes into the Georgia well the last couple years here, too, defensively. Eric Stokes, Quay Walker, Devontae Wyatt. But, I mean, Mims here, as we said, is just huge. We talk about the Packers and their love of offensive linemen who bring a little versatility. Maybe can play multiple positions on that thing. You draft Mims, you're locking him in as a tackle. You know, you're going to put him over on that left side. The thing is with the left tackle position in Green Bay, we don't know that answer, and maybe Green Bay isn't 100% sure either. But do they view Rashid Walker as the long-term starting left tackle for the Pack? Do they view him as that guy? Last year, heading into season, I think we all kind of thought, okay, Yosh Nyman's going to be the next left tackle. And then he got beat out, essentially, by Rashid Walker. Preseason, training camp, into the regular season. They had a little bit of a rotation there at points in the season, but then it was clear that the team, that the coaching staff, favored Rashid Walker over Yosh Nyman. So, and Walker got better later on in the season. In the final six games, including the playoff games, he allowed only one sack, nine pressures, would rank 10th in pass blocking efficiency, 29th in a run blocking grade. If you're looking at Pro Football Focus numbers, overall in 2023, in 545 pass blocking snaps, he allowed 36 quarterback pressures, 6 sacks, a Pro Football Focus grade of a 68.8, which is 33rd among tackles. That's his entire season. If Green Bay feels like they need to upgrade at that left tackle position, then, yes, you look at a guy potentially like a Mims from Georgia. If they feel like Walker is the long-term starter, then you're probably not drafting a left tackle with your first-round pick. Maybe it's a day two pick, because we know Green Bay wants to have competition at that offensive line. The five best will play, right? Might as well just make a shirt on that. Residence Branding, if you're listening, make a shirt on it. Five best will play. Send it over to Matt LaFleur. But if you're drafting this massive tackle out of Georgia, you're putting him in at that left tackle. The thing is with Mims, he's got these raw tools. He's got these raw traits, combination of, you know, his physical nature and just athletic talent. He doesn't have a lot of experience. He's only got 8 starts. He's got to get better in the run game and run blocking. So is this a little bit of a reach for Green Bay, maybe for a team that, or maybe they view this like as a possible pick where, okay, we can draft him the first round. He's still raw. But because we have Walker, maybe he starts off on the bench and just provides a little bit of depth. And we can mold him. Luke Butkus can mold him. Adam Stenovich can mold him to become better. He could play either the right or the left. Probably ideally with his size, you're hoping left. and especially if he needs to improve in his run blocking. That's, you know, when you're looking at that right tackle, you're kind of hoping that they're really pretty darn good at run blocking. And you got Zach Tom kind of already holding the fort over there. So, high ceiling. The potential is really high. But I think due to he's still kind of raw, inexperienced, do you throw him out there day one, your starting left tackle? I don't think you can. So, if this is a guy that is... That the Packers are seriously considering or would seriously consider drafting with their first overall pick, I think we as fans probably have to temper the expectations for him in year one. Like, and I think Green Bay probably will have to temper the expectations in year one. And it might be a pick where he's going to be a depth piece in year one. Hope maybe year two, he's your starter at left tackle. And Walker is kind of that bridge for a year, which I know will probably upset a lot of Packers fans because they want a first-round draft pick to play right away and to contribute right away, especially since you've got Super Bowl goals again. We've got Super Bowl goals again. We're not rebuilding. We're not retooling. We want to compete for a Super Bowl championship this year. So while drafting Mims would fill a need, fill some depth, I don't think he would be a starter in year one, which I think will annoy or upset some fans out there. And Walker might just be that bridge for another year. The main thing when it comes to these offensive linemen, you know, when we talk about these offensive linemen and potential pick, we know the Packers are going to draft a couple of offensive linemen. We know that. It's just the big question mark is when. Do they view Sean Ryan as like, okay, he could be a starter. He is a starter in this league. Do they view Rashid Walker as a starter in this league? If those are both yes, that yes, these are our guys, these are starters for the next couple of years, they're probably not drafting. In all likelihood, maybe not drafting linemen early in the draft then. And then do they go back on their pedigree like, hey, we've been able to find offensive linemen later on in the draft, in the mid-rounds. Josh Sitt. David Bakhtiari, T.J. Lang, Elton Jenkins was a second-round pick. Zach Tom was a fifth-round pick. Fifth-round pick, fourth-round pick. Do they go back on that pedigree and be like, hey, we're confident we can find some guys later on in the draft, utilize, maybe we use our early picks for different positions. But that's the thing we'll find out. We'll find out pretty soon when it comes to draft how the Packers view, I think, guys like Rashid Walker and Sean Ryan. If they view them as starters, maybe they're not drafting that lineman early on. If they got question marks, a little bit unknown, maybe we're seeing them picking up a tackle or a guy that could play multiple positions like Graham from Duke that we talked about yesterday that you can plug in at a different spot. All right, let's take a quick break and let's talk some Badgers with Mr. RJ Cardinal coming up after these quick words. Perks. I love perks. You love perks. We all love perks. And one of the best perks you could find in the Chippewa Valley is Hy-Vee Perks. Hy-Vee Perks is a free and easy program for Hy-Vee shoppers. Access exclusive perks prices, earn discounts on gas when you purchase designated products at Hy-Vee, and save more with exclusive deals, offers, and rewards. The best part? It's free to join. Not a part of Hy-Vee Perks yet? No worries. Just stop by Hy-Vee in Eau Claire to sign up. Start taking advantage of the best shopping deals in the Chippewa Valley right now with Hy-Vee and Hy-Vee Perks. Toyson Ford is your go-to destination for quality vehicles and exceptional service. At Toyson Ford, they have a vast selection of new and used cars, trucks, and SUVs to fit your lifestyle and budget. Their dedicated team is there to make your car buying experience a breeze. They offer financing options that suit your needs and a service center that keeps your vehicle running smoothly. Come on down to Toyson Ford and test drive your dream car today. They're located at 1000 Chippewa Crossing Boulevard in Chippewa Falls. Toyson Ford, where your road to excellence begins. We've got a lot of stuff to catch up on in the Wisconsin Badger world. Perfect time to bring in our dude, Mr. RJ Cardinal, this morning. RJ, let's start off with the Badger women's basketball team. Last night, I know they were favored heading into that game against St. Louis, but ultimately falling 65-60 in the Great Eight. And it was the NIT. But RJ, is there anything that, you know, maybe the team itself can take away from this run, or maybe fans, because this has probably been a program I think a lot of people have been waiting or wanting to see get really successful. Is there anything they can take away from this season and build upon for next year or the next couple of years that, hey, maybe we're talking about NCAA tournament appearances?
I don't know where we are in that sense yet, but the fact that they had a nice little run here and really, I mean, the only way I think they lost was because on their first possession of the game, you lose your leading scorer, and you still only lost by five. But overall, I'm not sure where exactly this puts you in terms of being competitive in even in the Big Ten, as well as moving the program forward. It helps out a lot. Because before this, you wouldn't have had an opportunity to continue playing basketball. So absolutely participating in the women's NIT helps out in that sense. But, I mean, you go ahead and, I mean, if you watched any of the LSU-Iowa game, they're leaps and bounds away from that level of talent. I mean, they still aren't on the precipice of being competitive in the NCAA tournament. And I think you still need a lot to change in that sense. Something I think Dawn Staley has done well at is the availability of herself and her entire team to have the community come around and actually support her basketball team. And South Carolina is doing amazing. Mm-hmm. The thing here is, I don't know anybody who is regularly reporting on the women's basketball team, and with the amount of people who transfer out and hit the transfer portal year in, year out, and having no discussion whatsoever coming from the team about it, it's still very behind closed doors, and I don't, outside of the niche fans who will always be women's basketball fans, it's hard to get behind the program right now, even with the coaching change in year three, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's still hard to say where this team is, even after this nice little run.
You mentioned the comparison with Dawn Staley. Would you say that's kind of similar? Because let's face it, UW Green Bay women's basketball is program, and they've been really good for a long time. I mean, I remember not that long ago, I mean, they would be consistently ranked in the top 25. You know, they were back in a tournament this year. Would you say that's kind of similar to the job that UW Green Bay has done over there?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, for the longest time, they were the number one team in the state.
Yeah.
And you're not even at the flagship public school or at Marquette. Girls started wanting to go to UW Green Bay over Madison. And right now, girls in this state want to go anywhere but Madison, you know? I don't know what has to change to have that happen, but it's been happening for a while now. And, it's one of those. I know it's those things growing up. Nobody was, especially nowadays, I don't think anybody was Wisconsin women's basketball fans growing up, you know. That kind of attitude needs to change, and you just need to convince, and you know, they have had some higher profile in-state girls commit here, but then they transfer out and you know, they do well elsewhere or never even look at Wisconsin. But something's got to change where you can convince one or two of the top kids in the state in one class to come here and help change whatever it is they're looking to change and get to where a program in a Power Five conference, what should be the lead program in your state, needs to be.
Especially, I mean, look how competitive the Big Ten is with women's basketball, and it's about to get even more competitive, you know, with the West Coast coming over here, too.
Yeah, I mean, you got a freshman All-American and Juju Watkins coming over with USC, and you're just watching some of this, and, like, it's just, it's not a competitive balance. I mean, you know, they're talking about when Big Ten tournament expands, the bottom four teams are not going to make it into the tournament, and you're looking at Wisconsin there saying they – I mean, where you looking at them right now, I mean, I think they have a shot of being those bottom four teams that don't make it, and then do you really get a look at the NIT moving forward? So, yeah, it's something's got to change and quickly, and whether it's through the transfer portal, and maybe that's what you got to do for the time being, but you got to get some sort of talent in here to really start pushing things. And I mean, heck, they needed to win last night and then win the final just to have a winning season for the first time since 2011, I think I looked up and saw.
Wow.
But, yeah, it's one of those, something's got to change. And, you know, it probably didn't help this year when Marissa Mosley made the comments of run-of-the-mill white girls.
No.
It's not the greatest comment to make in the state of Wisconsin, and it's a broad generalization here, but a vast majority of the state is white people. So, I mean, you're not really making yourself the best person to go play for right now. But yeah, a lot of things need to change in order to kind of get the ball rolling in the right direction. And I think this little run in the NIT maybe helped that. But then you got to commit to a lot of things in the off season here and keep people in the program as well as build on and bring in new people that can help push you forward.
Mm-hmm. RJ, staying with basketball, but on the men's side, kind of a whirlwind like week and some change. So AJ Storr declared for the draft but kept his college eligibility, and then day or two later he enters the transfer portal. And there was, before that came out, when I was reading his statement, it really seemed like it was a goodbye to Wisconsin, even if he decided to you know, take his name out of the NBA draft. And lo and behold, it sure looks like it. So I mean, what's kind of been the talk like in Madison surrounding this AJ Storr, who's like, I don't fault him exploring his draft and kind of getting some feedback on that, but you know, now entering the transfer portal. And I know last week we had talked and you had heard some rumors about maybe Illinois or whoever was interested in him, but what's kind of been the talk like in this last week about the AJ Storr news?
It's really along the lines of, yeah, we're not expecting him back. Apparently his family didn't like the fact he got benched when he wasn't playing well. It just a whole bunch of things that are all come together here where it was, yeah, like we talked last week, apparently Illinois is out there, Kansas is out there, and a few SEC schools reached out to him as well, and that was all before he went into the portal. So, you know, what are we doing here? But to a T, when people are like, saying things, he's letting them know his goal is the NBA. He's not, and he has to keep his options open because, quite frankly, Wisconsin can't wait for him to, you know, I think the deadline's sometime in May. And it's not like Wisconsin can wait on him to pull his name out and he's coming back. So he's leaving all of his options open. Just because he's in the portal doesn't mean he's leaving Wisconsin, but I'd lean more towards that he will not be a Badger next year. And I guess in this sense now, you can operate and the team can operate as if he will not be here next year until he lets them know, yes, I'm coming back. And like you said, that statement really made it seem like he will not be back at UW next year. And that's, I think, what everybody around here is running off of, saying we will need a new player to replace him next year.
So does that still, you know, while he's going through this process and, you know, entering a transfer portal, Does that still kind of hold up Wisconsin from offering maybe a scholarship to another player until that becomes officially official that he's no longer in Wisconsin? Or can they still go about their business?
They can go about their business right now because, I mean, the worst comes to worst. They can say, hey, we've moved on. We can't really wait this much longer. We're a program that needs to get the kids in now rather than wait until right up in the deadline. So it should be something he understands, and who knows, maybe they had a talk and encouraged him to enter the transfer portal as well. It could be some stuff as simple as that, but for the most part, it's one of those. I really think his goal is the NBA this year, but if the family stuff is true, that they didn't really like him being benched when he wasn't playing well, that probably could have a factor into it as well.
RJ Carnell, our Badger analyst, joining us here this morning. Switching over to the men's hockey team, I mean, what a battle in the first round, falling in overtime. And while I know it's kind of a disappointing ending, and we've talked about the job Mike Hastings has done and this team has done, like, I felt Monday morning, yesterday morning, I was like, yeah, that was kind of a downer. But at the same time, when you look at the broad scheme of things in the overall season, it's hard to be really down because, as you've mentioned many times, there really wasn't any expectations, didn't know what to expect. They by far blew out the expectations this year. So now, looking at this year and looking at the future and the job that Mike Hastings has done, I mean, that bar's got to be incredibly high, I would imagine, for this team for the foreseeable future.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you beat your last year's win total before the turn of the calendar. So, I mean, that's always good. You made the NCAA tournament when you had 23 wins in total the past two seasons. And granted, you still were in the NCAA tournament in 2021 with a team that probably should have gone a lot further than losing to Bemidji State in the first round. But you cannot be upset with the results of this season. It's a good thing to get back to where they were. Some of the guys, the talent came in. He brought in some talent. Hastings did, and then I ended up watching the game with some buddies, some who played hockey through high school, and then a couple who actually had been like coaches as well. And they were none too happy with the way the game was being called in terms of penalties, where it was 4-1 in favor of Quinnipiac, but. I'm sitting there watching the game and I'm like, I don't know. I think some of these are okay. the slash in overtime though, where it was clearly down at the end of the stick, not the best. And then there was a clear tripping by Quinnipiac in overtime where a guy hooked the leg and lifted up and wasn't called. So there are two calls that I noticed, irked me, but right. I'll defer to the guys who actually played and coached, and they had their 1-3-1 defense that was explained to me as a pretty elementary scheme, but hey, it works. Mm-hmm. And if you don't get quick and out on that, they can force you into some turnovers and things like that, and that's how the game played out. And the Badgers just weren't as quick as they could have been with the puck and all that, and the times they were, we saw scoring like right in the start of the second period that got them right back in the game, even though at 1-0 everybody seemed to already hand the game over to Quinnipiac during the first intermission. So outside of the game playing out like it did, like you said, the season had expectations of just having a winning record again. So where you got to, where you were on the verge of being regular season Big Ten champs, somehow Ohio State just had your number in the second half of the season and probably cost you a little bit because you could have been in a different, probably could have been in a different region and maybe gotten a win because, quite frankly, the region the Badgers were placed in was probably, I think we talked about it last week, in terms of using World Cup terms, it was the group of death.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, RJ, to kind of wrap things up here too, I know, you know, football-wise, spring ball and all that, and I know Wisconsin, they announced, late last week, a home and away with Cal. I don't know if Aaron Rodgers is going to be in town to do coin flips when that gets in town for 2020.
A big old ACC Big Ten battle.
Yeah, right. God, that's weird. So spring ball and such. But, you know, when we get to that, and, you know, I know we've had some stuff out there already. What are some of the position battles, or what are you kind of watching for during spring ball for this Badger football team?
Well, I mean, definitely QB. You know, we'll see what we have there. See where running back fleshes out. I think one of the guys is in early. Other than that, I don't know who's all going to be ready to play in the spring. And then really just that defensive side of the ball, see how things flesh out over there, because it could have been a lot better last year. So really, you know, trenches to the back end of that defense. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens in this spring and then moving into fall camp, how that fleshes out, because quite frankly, the defensive side of the ball was left to be more desirable. And yeah, even the people who look at the offense, it still had one of the higher scoring offenses in Wisconsin single season history. So they did okay there for you know, what we thought we saw. And I really think defensively, where we had been seeing ourselves, we kind of want to see it back to where it was when it was a top five defense in the country. So really top to bottom defensive side of the ball is what I'm kind of looking for, and seeing what we can replace at linebacker, as well as how this new dollar package is going to play out, and how the position of the Rover and all that kind of stuff, and the whole Legion of Boom style of defense plays out for the Badgers.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, we covered it all, man. I think we covered a lot of different sports right now, so we appreciate it as always, buddy. So we'll let's do it again next week. All right, let's do it again next
week. Absolutely.
Maybe
we can absolutely do that.
All right, maybe we'll have some more. Hopefully, we'll actually get some transfer portal guys to come to Wisconsin.
Coming in,
yeah, that'd be nice. Yeah, no kidding. All right, RJ, appreciate it as always, buddy. Enjoy the weekend. We'll catch up with you next week, okay?
You too. Sounds good. We'll talk to you then.
You got it. RJ Cardinal. That is going to do it for us on this episode of the Man Cave Podcast. Big thanks for tuning in. And quick housekeeping note again, if you haven't taken a few seconds yet to follow and subscribe or give us a 5-star rating and a positive review wherever you listen to your podcasts, I would greatly appreciate that, because that's how others find the podcast, all right? So until next time, I'm Dan Casper, and I will talk to you on the next episode of the Man Cave Podcast.